Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather,
Mercedes,
and Micah.
And on today's episode, we're going to be discussing an article that's titled The Last Children of Down Syndrome, which was published in the Atlantic December 2020 issue and also found online. We're really excited for this conversation. Thank you for joining us, friends, and welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Right, before we jump in, I want to read another of our listeners' lovely reviews. This is something new that we've started doing this year, and we're excited to hear from our listeners every week. So this review is from Lfulks. It's L-F-U-L-K-S, who says, I'm not a mom. I'm not part of the Down syndrome community, but this podcast is everything. These women point out the beauty in all of our differences and how we can all benefit by loving and inviting those with differing abilities into our circles. I feel so full of love after I listen and ready to go out with eyes to notice the often looked over. Love you, ladies. Well,
love you, girl.
Yeah, good grief. Good grief.
Humbling.
This is, you know, when you hit the heart on Instagram and all the little hearts like burst out. That's how I feel right now.
Oh, I do too. That's a perfect way to put it.
Oh, so I love this new segment of our episodes. So all of our listeners out there, don't forget to review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And maybe we will read it aloud next week, depending how sweet you make it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
We love reading these, and we appreciate your support so much.
I like this particular review feels like it links really well to our conversation today, because that idea of seeing the beauty in all of our differences, and that this woman's not a part of the Down syndrome community, but why we have the podcast. I think for all of us who are shouting the worth of our kids with Down syndrome in spaces besides right here, it's those kinds of comments that remind us, like, yes, keep doing this, you know, keep doing this. And comments like that after reading an article like the one found in The Atlantic, which we're just going to jump right in. I know we do our little cute little catch-ups and banter. The only thing I'm going to say, and we're going to say it again at the end, is this is episode 99, which, if you guys know the next number after 99, is 100, which means our 100th episode is next week, the first week of February.
We did it.
100 episodes and we're done. I'm just kidding. Just getting started.
Woo! But,
we have a fun episode coming up, so make sure that you don't miss that. And if you're not yet subscribed, what do you do on a podcast?
You subscribe.
That's what you do. We say it at the end of every episode. If you're not yet subscribed, subscribe, and then you won't miss it. It'll pop up and there it is, and it'll remind you to listen. So 100th episode. But today we're going to talk about this article. So this article is titled The Last Children of Down Syndrome, with the subtitle Prenatal Testing is Changing Who Gets Born and Who Doesn't. This is just the beginning. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's weighty. The article was written by a woman named Sarah Zong, and she goes to and interviews people in Denmark to talk about the effects of prenatal testing in Denmark. And this is not the first time an article has been written about prenatal testing and Down syndrome in Denmark. Denmark's among many Nordic countries that provide taxpayer-paid prenatal testing for Down syndrome and other genetic anomalies. And in Denmark, more than 95% of those who receive a DS, Down syndrome diagnosis, choose to terminate the pregnancy. There is a number out there in 2019, only 18 children were born in that country who had Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. So I remember in 2017, very clearly, an article coming out that was called Eradicating Down Syndrome. And it was talking about Down syndrome in Denmark and having conversations about that. And this article seems like a similar idea, goes a little more in depth. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting conversation to have in a Down syndrome space, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of preaching to the choir, I would imagine. And I do think that there are some issues that there are issues in it that have been brought up for me that maybe aren't as much preaching to the choir, but like, oh, things to think about, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's I also am a voice and have written articles in a pro-life space. And so mm-hmm. then people in the pro-life space will bring articles like this to my attention with a different agenda than people in the Down syndrome mm-hmm. space. So that it's layered and it's nuanced and it's a lot to navigate. Mm-hmm. And I have to be honest, I don't even know how to jump in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should start with just a little background into the article.
Okay.
It starts with a woman named, we were trying to figure out how to pronounce her name, Gret, maybe, Faltinsen. And she is the head of the National Down Syndrome Association in Denmark. And she has an 18-year-old son, and he with Down syndrome. And so it follows her and her son. It follows her conversations with the people who call her after getting a in utero diagnosis, trying to decide whether or not to have an abortion. And it talks about the state of things in Denmark, where Heather already mentioned there's a 95% abortion rate. And an interesting thing that it talked about is that there's a gulf between kind of these publicly expressed attitudes, mm-hmm. like where there's so many national entitlements, like education, healthcare, so much available for people with disabilities, and the private decisions of people. And so much so that there were only 18 born in the entire country in 2019. And we can compare that with there's 6,000 people born with Down syndrome in the United States every year. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I thought was interesting is she talks about how Down syndrome is frequently called the canary in the coal mine for selective reproduction, and how what is happening with Down syndrome kind of foreshadows what will be happening when it comes to genetic testing and selective reproduction in the future. Mm-hmm. And I a lot of what I appreciated in this article was how she states the facts, but I feel like there's like a message, but it becomes more and more positive or hopeful, I feel mm-hmm. like, towards the end mm-hmm. of this article. But she talks about how Down syndrome being among the first genetic conditions to be routinely screened in utero and the most morally troubling because it's among the least severe. So I wanted to just kind of throw that out at you guys. What mm-hmm. do you think about that? I mean, I think first of all, we have to break apart this notion of like the more severe,
right,
the less morally troubling, right, like that whole thing. But what do you think about this canary in the coal mine for selective reproduction idea?
I think a lot of things. Yeah, it is a canary in a coal mine. I mean, it is. I think it to go down that route of selective reproduction. Where is a line? I just mm-hmm. think it's one of those things that is there ever going to be a line? And do you just keep pushing the line? Is the line always so blurry that you just step over the line? It just mm-hmm. it just begs a lot of. I feel like there needs to now all of a sudden be so many rules and protocols in place, which there are, but yeah. everyone's pushing it a little further, a little further, a little further. And it goes back to me always. And where this article when I first learned about termination rates in Denmark and knowing what they are in the United States, which they're better in the United States, but we're still more than 50% of the people who find out they're getting an in utero diagnosis choose mm-hmm. to terminate their pregnancy solely based on that fact. Right. Mm-hmm. The more so thinking about it then and thinking about this article it always goes back to me of an issue of humanity and mm-hmm. what determines that someone is human or not. Mm-hmm. Is there a level of human? Is there a better kind of human and a less kind of human? And for me, in wrestling with that question and being in the spaces I've been in, I just don't think there is a better kind of human. I think, right. like I've say this, the heart beating in your chest and the air in your lungs gives you worth and value as a human. Mm-hmm. And so to look at genetic testing or in utero testing being done because you want a certain kind of kid, it is playing God in a sense. And if you don't believe in God, then there's surely another way to look at it. Mm-hmm. I just think it leads us towards an outcome that is not human. Mm-hmm. It leads us towards a non-human outcome. Mm. And even within the Down syndrome conversation, I think of how if you want to take like siphon off communities and you look at the Down syndrome community and you look at those of us who are in it, and of course not everybody's happy about it, right? And she highlights a woman in this article who has a child with Down syndrome who has some more needs and who can be physically aggressive with his siblings and mm-hmm. with her, and how they didn't know. They had an in utero negative, false negative, and that they would have terminated even mm-hmm. now, like even after he's born and they're parenting him. It's like, if they could go back, they would terminate. Those stories exist. But if you look at our Down syndrome community, they're very far and few between, you know, and even like the studies that have been done on people with Down syndrome and their happiness and their contentment with who they are and where they're at in the world compared to people without Down syndrome who are like so, so miserable. So if you take that community, our little community, you know, and like our little good news segment, it's just a little thing, but like celebrating the little things that feel so important, and watching my kids and how they value themselves and value me makes me value myself and them mm-hmm. and others more. And so if all of a sudden the goal is to be, I don't know, the tallest, the prettiest, the smartest, mm-hmm. it's like, you look at all the tallest, prettiest, smartest people, there's like a lot of miserable people in that category, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so it just feels like if we're going to be choosing who is better or not, which you shouldn't be doing that, but it's almost like, can we flip that on its head? If you're really mm-hmm. looking at people who are content and happy
right.
in life.
They talk about, they interviewed these people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they interviewed this researcher who's talking about what makes people choose termination. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of what you're saying, Heather, because he says that, so they argued that, this is a quote, they argued that prenatal testing has the effect of reducing an unborn child to a single aspect, Down syndrome, for example, and making parents judge the child's life on that alone. Wasserman told me he didn't think that most parents who make these decisions are seeking perfection. Rather, he said there's a profound risk aversion. Yeah. When they interviewed parents who made the unusual choice to continue a pregnancy after Down syndrome diagnosis, they found them more willing to embrace uncertainty. Mm. And then they talk about this, like what that is the distinction. It's like risk aversion versus uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like there's something in us like that makes us more willing to embrace uncertainty? And that's why we're on this path? Or do you feel like this is, does that ring true to you? I guess. And maybe, I guess I'm adding on to what you said, Heather, because like even our ability to celebrate small good news and to feel like we're growing and like these being the tallest and the prettiest and the strongest isn't the most important thing, and that joy is found in other places. Is that all part of the same thing in us that is willing to embrace uncertainty?
Oh, I have a lot to say. And okay, I want to set a stage real quick. So it's funny that you asked that, because if you think about, and I feel like our listeners, and I feel like the world, because of what we see in movies and shows that do really well, I think we do want that. But then we, when it comes down to it, can we take that step? So if you think about like sports or whatever, like some of the movies that get me are always inspirational sports movies, right? The underdog mm-hmm. who achieves the unthinkable, right? And I feel like we want to root, and we want to root for that person, and that even though we don't seem to seek perfection because of, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I'm just saying that innately as humans, we do like to, we get like a good story, like American Dream. Like we do want to root on, right? Like we do have that. That is something we could see as a whole, that's successful, that kind of story, blah, blah, blah. But man, it's probably scary when it's actually happening to you and you love someone. Like, I feel like the sense of a child, your child, it's almost like that's a different level of risk because you love your child so much, or that's a different level of risk because it's not really you. And you could, in this sense, choose to go down that route or not. Okay. I don't know if that point's coming together, but I think as humans, we do like to root for the underdog. And what does that mean though, for something like this and what we've seen in the past with 2020, the marginalized, right? There is something that as a society, that we fear when it comes to not even imperfect or perfect, but when it comes to different and a hierarchy. I still feel that the flesh or human nature want to be first. We want there to be better so that we can know where we fit into that. So there's got to be better, and then there's got to be worse too, or lower or less than. So I feel like until the end of time, those two things are going to be a battle. So when I see or read these articles about that in the Down syndrome space or within the special needs space, or even when we talk about America and the rest of the world, there's this notion, and maybe it's not so blatant, but that one is better and the other one is not as good. So I feel like there's two things happening, that people as humans, we do resonate with the underdogs and we want to see them succeed. And then this thing where as humans, we want to know where our place is and we don't want to be at the bottom. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be at the end. So yeah. I feel like that. And when I stepped into parenting a child with Down syndrome, I felt a little bit like I did it because I felt maybe even a little bit invincible, and that I wanted to honor my brother who passed away. So my brother passed away from a drug and alcohol overdose. And we had also previously had a miscarriage. So these were two huge losses that were like probably the scariest thing that I could think of, losing a family member, right? Losing a close family member. And then also losing the hope of a child that Andy and I would raise. So these were the scariest things. And so my way of even like coping with that is like, nothing scarier than that. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do anything now. And one of the things that I want to do is I want to adopt. And to most people that seems so scary to adopt, mm-hmm. like, 'cause it comes with like a whole host of unknowns. And then like, okay, then you get this child, but what if? Mm-hmm. And all that went out the window. That wasn't scary to me because I've already experienced something really scary. So I almost felt empowered, like, come and get me. This is not bad. This is great. Totally. And it actually ended up being really great. And Sunny Mae is here. But I think sometimes when you aren't, I feel like life, if it's real safe for you and you haven't experienced those things, the Down syndrome diagnosis is that pivotal moment, right? this is that moment where something is being really scary thrown at my face. And what's hard is now with all these different protocols and studies, like you can choose to not go down that route. And so I feel like almost, not to get biblical, but Adam and Eve, like you could choose to take a bite or not, you know, like it's almost too much power to have in a moment of all the feelings of all the grief and of all the joy of, okay, we're going to have a baby. Okay. The grief, but the baby's going to turn out like this. I feel like as humans, that is almost too big of a power to hold and to do well. Not everybody can do that well. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just my take on that. It's too much power to have. Mm.
The question, like the aversion to risk, right? Risk aversion. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, Mercedes, that you talked about your loss with your brother and your miscarriage. Mm. And that's such an interesting idea because it is, I think of it, what Down syndrome has given me so much, it's given me so much. But what having kids with Down syndrome has given me is like this palms up posture, you know, like this, I'm going to hold everything so, so loosely. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has been pivotal and critical in my growth as a human, mm-hmm. In everything that I pursue. There's a line in the article that she just writes, parenting is a plunge into the unknown and the uncontrollable. It's beautiful in this way, but also daunting. And I feel like period, full stop, not parenting a child with Down syndrome, just parenting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's always a little bit mind boggling to me that people are like, if we're going to get to the point where you're going to get to choose a lot of who your kid will be, it kind of stops there. Like at that mm-hmm. point, then you now have to raise that child in this world. And there's so much out of your control, no matter how tightly you hold, and probably mm-hmm. the tighter you hold, the more likely your kid will need therapy. And that when I was teaching, I taught special education. And so I was every day spending time with teenagers and adults who have disabilities. And that was my norm. I remember feeling like someone would get pregnant and have a baby who didn't have a disability. And I'm like, what? Like, how in the world do people have babies without disabilities? Just because I was like so immersed, you know, yeah. meeting people like, this is my sixth kid. I'm like, you have six kids and none of them have a disability. This is wild. But I remember I worked with a mom who had two sons. She was a coworker. So her kids weren't in her son was in my class, but they were both in their 20s. One had Down syndrome and one did not. And I remember having a conversation with her. Her son, who didn't have Down syndrome, was struggling with drugs and alcohol and had just moved back in her home. And she was like, I would take 10 kids with Down syndrome before having a kid who is dealing with addiction. Like it is so much harder, you know, but when that baby was born, he's not born with an addiction. There's just so, right. It feels like what you're saying, like a little bit what you're saying, Mercedes, that idea of like, it's too much power for us to hold, for someone right. to hold, to make that decision. And there's such a sense of foolishness about it to me. Like
1,000%.
A baby is born into the world and you will foolishly believe that if they don't have Down syndrome, they will be better off than if they did right. have Down syndrome.
Right.
I don't know.
It is foolish because free will, right? Your child, your perfectly neurotypical child will ultimately make their own choices, regardless of how good of a parent you were or how terrible you were. Uh-huh. They are going to make their own choices that potentially could destroy themselves. Or they could be great, but either way, you don't know. It's like when moms feel shame for not being able to breastfeed their child. So they're forced into formula. But then guess what? At 5, you're buying your kid a Happy Meal.
Right.
I mean, you just like, you can only control so much. And it is foolish. And I don't know there it's, but I know we all do it because we try and do the best we can, but with this, it's just too big of a decision to hold, I think, for humans, for parents.
Yeah. In the article, the sister of this 18-year-old with Down syndrome, she says something really similar about, she says something like, if the doctor handed anyone a long list of the problems their kids would have in their lifetimes, then nobody would have a baby.
Right.
And 100%.
And it's so true. And that's like, that's the hardest part of this diagnosis, is that it's like, here you go. Your child may never live independently. Your child will, you know, probably have a heart condition. Your child is blah, blah, blah. And so here's everything all on paper, and it's going to be hard. And mm-hmm. that is really the only difference, is mm-hmm. that it's, you're just given the list ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And with that list, it's all so detached from a real live human being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, back to that core idea of what makes us human. Well, it's not a list, you know? So to be given the kind of what you were saying, Mercedes, like to be given that power to make such a huge decision based on a list, right? Like based on something that doesn't yet exist. On a human being that doesn't yet exist, it's overwhelming, really, to think that that's what's happening here, and that in a country like Denmark, it's happening 95% of the time. And as people who are Down syndrome advocates, I mean, it crushes me, and it is crushing because that it just shows what that communicates to my kids with Down syndrome is you are less human. That's what it communicates to them. You are not worthy. You are a disappointment. You are all the things that I don't want, right? Or like that I'm afraid of and I don't want. Not me. I, Denmark. That's what it communicates to my kids. My kids. My kids are magic. So don't you dare be talking to my kids that way. It's kind of how I feel. I get real like angry at mm-hmm. In the conversation. I get really angry about it. And then I get so sad because mm-hmm. I think when we're making big decisions, big and small, and especially in conflict, like we're seeing what someone's doing or we're looking at somebody a certain way in a negative light, I think what that is just a reflection of something in us. Mm-hmm. And so what is that broken piece inside of someone who won't parent a child with Down syndrome that they're seeing in a child with Down syndrome, but it's really something in them. Like mm-hmm. it's the thing in them that is broken, that needs healing and opportunity for restoration and growth and health. And to think that on a large scale that's happening, it just feels so sad. It just feels so sad that there's so, in so much of humanity are people who can't see the worth and value in themselves. Right. If they can't see it in their possible child with Down syndrome, then surely they don't see it in themselves, you know? And right. then if they terminate that pregnancy or they don't parent that child, then that's just going to, it's not going to help them see their worth and value.
Right. I feel like this article, when it came up again, when it came up last year, it was such a critical time in our history, you know, and talking about like even like Black Lives Matter. So much of our conversation in the world was with diversity, and I feel like when it came out, I was being hit all around. I felt like our family was just being hit. We were a ragtag team, you know, being being people of color and then also raising a child with Down syndrome, like, wow, we are the minority, the least of these. I kind of felt like when it came out, you know, and being in the social media space, it made me feel all of a sudden unsafe, or actually feeling like our family was not being seen as an example of how true there is that discrimination, hate, and a desire for hierarchy does still exist, and it's alive and well, you know, because we have a lot of followers and we have a lot of friends and everything that would still very much see something as, I don't know, are you sure you're not being sensitive? I don't think it's about that. This is conspiracy. This is about political party, you know? And it's just became so prevalent to me, I guess, even for my sanity, of how, and I leaned into my faith of how, like, this will be a battle to the end of time. And like, when I think of Denmark, I would think like, oh Lord, they know not what they do. You know, it's so huge. And the pioneers that are already there, the families that are already there being amazing and raising their children with Down syndrome there and having them out in the world in Denmark. I don't know. I just pray for them and cheer them on, because that's huge. They're being radical.
Yeah.
You know, and God will bless that. But I don't know. It seems so big to hold, because I remember when this article came out and it was like, golly, our fam is not liked by many, you know, or is not seen as worthy by many. Like when I think about it in those sense, but obviously we are loved by many and it's not that bad. And I will never let fear drive us, but, it is hard, right? Like to be like, hey, that's my child with Down syndrome, or hey, that is my Black child. Like, I don't know. And I don't mean to compare both, and our listeners might get annoyed, but this is true feelings. You know, this world is not safe, because they are not seen as fully equally human. You feel, I mean, I'm sure, Heather, you know what I mean? Truly Macy and Augie, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And even in when you take into the adoption space, and we know so many families have adopted a child with Down syndrome, and people reach out to me on Instagram at least weekly to inquire about adopting, like my journey, and they're interested in adopting a child with Down syndrome. And it's not everyone's story, but for my kids, and I'm pretty sure for Sunflower and for many kids, an adoption plan was created solely based on their diagnosis. Otherwise, the parents would have chose to parent. And I mean, let that sit, you know, like let that sit. And, and it's nuanced, you know, after I read this article for the first time, I went on my Instagram stories and just gave some feedback, because a lot of people on social media have been bringing it to my attention and asking me my opinions. And the pro-life community, an article was written by someone in the pro-life community feeling really frustrated because they felt as though people who in Denmark who have terminated their pregnancies were being looked at and like given a lot of grace and like a positive light. And she even talks about him, the author of this article talks about them as like the unspoken majority in Denmark. It's like this, and they're like not allowed to talk about why they've done it. And so part of the article, they dig into that. And again, I go back to, and I don't want to, people who are pro-life in the sense of being mostly anti-abortion pro-lifers are doing the work that they're doing. And I don't want to take away from, or it's not about that for me in this article and in this conversation. It's that if we are as someone who feels frustrated about or disgusted by, or whatever a feeling, if you feel a strong knee-jerk reaction feeling about people with Down syndrome being terminated, babies with Down syndrome being terminated solely based on a diagnosis. And if you can see that as modern day eugenics and whatever, in that kind of a light, in this negative light, what is happening in every other space that you're in which people with Down syndrome are not being seen as fully human? Mm-hmm. Because it's happening to our, on our left and our right. It's happening everywhere. It's in our schools. It's in our workplace. It's mm-hmm. in our churches. It's in our, you know, fill in the blank. It's all those places. And we need to care about that. And we need mm-hmm. to do something about that. Because if we had a world in which Down syndrome was embraced, then it would hold less of a risk. Mm-hmm. The thought of having a child with Down syndrome would be less risky because they'd be born into a world that embraces them. But that's not mm-hmm. the world we're in. And everybody is responsible for that, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Everybody holds some kind of responsibility. There is a collective here that I think needs to be addressed that I don't hear in the conversation very often.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful. Mm-hmm. There's a dad in the article who says, we need more kinds of normal.
Mm.
And I love that. I think like that is what you're talking about, like what we're doing out in the world, advocating for our kids yeah. is creating more kinds of normal for people. Mm-hmm. The more that we are offering other options and ways to be besides the prettiest, the smartest, the most successful, the more that our kids have space to be themselves and be welcomed into society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The hierarchy goes away.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it is worth noting that there has been huge progress made. Yeah. I mean, they even talk about towards the end of the article, they talk about a woman in the United States who had a son in 1961. And in 1961, when you had a child with Down syndrome, they were institutionalized almost always. Mm-hmm. That is not that long ago. That is not that long ago. And so, and even like we talk about Ruby's Rainbow all the time, you know, like when Mason was born 12 years ago, it wasn't even in my mind that she'd go to college. Mm-hmm. And even in the, like what's happened the last 10 years, when it comes to Down syndrome, and you see people with Down syndrome in the media and, you know, represented by brands and in the workplace. So there is, I feel like the progress that's happened in the last 10 years is almost like exponential. So there is still so much hope and a reminder why to show up, right? Like to keep showing up. I've said this before, but I feel like with Down syndrome, and just like a note to parents, because it can feel daunting. Like, what do you do then? You know, like those of us parenting kids with Down syndrome, we are doing our part within the collective to change the narrative for people with Down syndrome, right? For more babies to be born with the diagnosis and to live in a world in which they are embraced. But I think that the resistance is in the showing up. Mm-hmm. You show up, you take your kid to the grocery store, you take him to the park, you take him to the school, you insist that they're included and involved in all the things.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge in that we can't underestimate that advocacy work, mm-hmm. just the showing up when we're parenting our kids with Down syndrome.
I keep seeing when you say that with the showing up, the vision of the wave at stands, you know, at like baseball games, which hopefully one day we will all get to go to, but you know, the way,
in a grandstand,
like each time you show up, you know, like I imagine going to the grocery store and Sunny wants to put the groceries on the conveyor belt there was an exchange of smiles. That's a heart being changed, and mm-hmm. however big or small, mm-hmm. you know, as she's walking down the street, people notice, they see her. She has Down syndrome. She's cute. Hey, smile, change of heart. It's just this passing on the wave, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Love that.
I like that vision. I like that visual. I know at the end of the article, I don't know how you guys felt. There was some hope, but it also feels totally daunting, especially because they brought in this article. They talked quite a bit about just genetic testing in general, mm-hmm. and where you could go with that, you know, like how do you choose between one embryo with a slightly elevated risk of schizophrenia and another with a moderate risk of breast cancer? Like,
right.
Whoa, 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 whoa. We, yeah, like Mercedes pointed out earlier, we as humans should not have to make those decisions in no. utero. That is some scary shit.
Well, yep. It's the whole thing of too much information is too much information sometimes. What do you do with all that? You know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Trading. Mm-hmm. It's too hard to trade issues. Like, okay, that seems like it's a big deal, but wait, that thing's a big deal. And it's someone's life. Wait, my kid's life.
Yeah.
Which is my life. You know, I don't, it's so big.
Yeah.
This is why people write these crazy novels about the future.
Totally. And how we destroy like ourselves.
Yes, exactly. Why?
It's true.
Oh gosh.
I feel like this will be a daunting ending too. And what can we do? I feel like you're left like hanging.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
there's one more thing I thought was interesting at the end. That I think is always an interesting, important conversation for us to have. She says, like the third to last paragraph, I can't count how many times in the course of reporting this story, people remark to me, you know, people with Down syndrome work and go to college now. This Aww. Is an important corrective to the low expectations that persist and a poignant reminder of how transforming society has transformed the lives of people with Down syndrome. But right. it also does not capture the full range of experiences. Mm-hmm. And she yes. kind of goes on to like say, I've wondered why we so often need to point to achievements for evidence that the lives of people right. with Down syndrome are meaningful.
Yep.
And
right.
And I yes. think I found Let's that in myself. That. Yeah. Well, I found that in myself after Ace was born, where at first I was saying things like that to people, like, he has Down syndrome. But people with Down syndrome can do so much more now. They're going to college and they're blah, blah, blah. Right. And that the transformation in me over these years has been to back further and further away from these are the possible achievements that will make mm-hmm. his life valuable. Like to go, no, 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 no. That's just taking the same, like, elixir that our culture mm-hmm. has given me already about what makes us valuable and just taking it down a notch or something and being like, he is okay because he's going to be able to do more things than what people used to be able to do mm-hmm. when they had Down syndrome. But it has to be a total transformation of what mm-hmm. makes a life valuable. Just like you were talking about, Heather, that it is, we don't have to point to achievements for evidence in our kids' worth. Because their worth has nothing to do with achievements, just like our worth has nothing to do with achievements. And that's hard to, it's hard to switch that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like when you were saying that, I resonate with that so much just within this past year of being at home and having lots of time to think and work on myself of like, what my goals and my prayers for my children and ultimately all of them, the most important is that we all have a relationship with each other still in their adulthood. Like, and I feel like more often than not, especially with parenting a child with Down syndrome, that I feel like I can 99% say that I will have a relationship with Sunflower that is good, you know? And I feel like that is a gift that I can point to and repeatedly see if I were to talk to other parents, that they have a loving relationship with their adult child with Down syndrome. And that's something I pray that I have with my boys, and that achievement enough that my child with Down syndrome will be a loving, active participant within our family. Is a goal that I have, a desire that I have for my boys, that they right. are a loving family member to the families that they have and to me, because that mm-hmm. is truly what's the most thing in this world, you know?
Yeah.
And relationship with God. I mean, that's first, but I just feel like, gosh, that is so huge. That's all I want for you. I don't care about your job. I hope you are successful. I don't care about your job. I don't care if you're well known. I just want to be part of your life and you be part of mine.
Yeah. Forever. Yeah. I am thankful for that with Mason in August and pray for that for Truly too. Totally. I wrote this down, Micah, while you were sharing that idea of like achievement pointing to evidence that lives matter and people with Down syndrome matter. And I do caution myself, and I think I caution our community, or I feel the need to, because we do, there is with Down syndrome being more and more pushed to the forefront in our society, and showing up in spaces, there, it becomes that it's just now there's a certain kind of person with Down syndrome, mm-hmm. and that person will achieve things. And within our own community now, we're creating this idea that, oh, there is a better way to have Down syndrome. And it is like you're saying, it's going backwards. And I think that for me, I feel like my need for my kids with Down syndrome to be a certain way is no different than the person who needs their kid to not have Down syndrome. It becomes the same core, right? The same foundation. And I think that I need to be cautioned with that when it comes to raising my kids, because at the end of the day, what they've taught me and what they've shown me is the intrinsic value and worth of every human and of them, period, full stop, not if and when. And of course we push for progress, and of course we push ourselves and our kids to all be their best, but it doesn't make me much different than the woman who chooses to not parent because her child has Down syndrome. On that note, good news. Just kidding.
I know. Oh, we get the tissue and some fresh air.
And I do want to. I want to say this too, and we will wrap this up. I recognize that I have not been given an in utero diagnosis or an at birth diagnosis for Down syndrome. That my experience in choosing to parent a child with Down syndrome, while I have had some of the similar thoughts and ideas of, that initial grief that people so often share that they have when they get their diagnosis, it was short-lived for me, and I have a different experience here. But I want to recognize people listening who maybe are in that place of like, I wish my kid did not have Down syndrome. Like, I cannot relate to this idea of having a kid with Down syndrome is a good thing. I still, like the woman in the article, my kid hits me and is physically aggressive towards my children and is, you know, whatever the things are that feel incredibly challenging, they feel challenging because they're challenging. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage people to just have grace with themselves and with their kid, and that this is, and to seek out that opportunity to see the worth and humanity in yourself, mm-hmm. that your child is reflecting back on you. Mm-hmm. And that we need that. That's, I think, a need that we have from our kids, that they can reflect that back on us. And for us as a community to just extend so much grace for people to wherever we can meet them. I read that article by a woman who has a child with Down syndrome who was really angry about the gentle way in which this article addresses those who have chosen termination, and that we shouldn't have a gentle step in that direction, like towards that conversation. And while I am very much pro-life holistically, and I am anti-abortion, I just have learned in my years to have so much grace for people who choose to terminate a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. There's so much nuance. It is so layered and so nuanced. And for women who choose an adoption plan, right? Like, mm-hmm. for these women who I adore, who birthed my children. So this got a little muckier than I it's not as clear as I'm processing it out loud. And I think what I would just want to say is to extend grace to yourself and extend grace to others in this conversation, because it's, we haven't arrived. We're still learning and we're still growing, and there's still so much more to be said, and so much more progress to make. And none of us know, none of us have the answer.
Mm-mm.
As an individual, I don't think.
And I think too, it is, none of us have the right words, because as you pointed out, like, there can be some shame in sharing if you've had an abortion, or there can feel like so much shame having an abortion. And then there can, from those same people and feelings, be feeling so much shame by what kind of mom would give up their child, what kind of mom would give up their kid for adoption.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well then damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or like people,
what is there to say?
Yeah. Or people who are listening who have that, who are pregnant, who are like feeling shame because they don't want their kid to have Down syndrome.
Right.
You know, like, we've got to allow space for those feelings. But at the same time, we're doing this podcast because we believe people with Down syndrome are incredible, and we've mm-hmm. been changed by them, and we mm-hmm. stand for them and want them in this world more and more and more and more, mm-hmm. as many as possible, mm-hmm. however they are, whether they are mm-hmm. 25 still needing diapers and nonverbal, or whether they are mm-hmm. 25 driving a car. It's like mm-hmm. that we love them and we want them in this world, and we have so much, we have already learned so much from them, and we will continue to do so. And so,
amen, hallelujah.
Amen, hallelujah, I guess.
Or whatever.
Or whatever. That sounded like that. That's what I meant. I want to have a conversation about this with our listeners. So let's do that somehow, whether okay. we do like a live on Instagram this week, or yeah. Maybe we can get some good dialogue going on in our comments on Instagram. But I know that this brings up big feelings
mm-hmm.
for all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And those are good, big feelings. So any last words, Mercedes or Micah? I feel like I just word vomited all over. So hopefully someone got something from it.
I feel like
it.
I'm good.
I would say it was like a waterfall of word jewels, not Ooh. Water, Ooh. Not word vomit.
Okay.
A waterfall of word jewels, and I am receiving them and loving this whole conversation.
Yeah. All right. We do a thing called good news, and I feel like the tone is a little heavy, and so we're just going to call it out as awkward transition into lightness with some good news that is necessary. Going to share my good news. When we're recording these podcasts, we will sometimes do them back to back, and I went inside just now for a little break, and August was just finishing up his occupational therapy, and he wrote his whole name in capitals except for the T. He likes to do lowercase, AUGST, only with boxes as a support. So there's been like tracing, there's been dots, you know, for a long time, like starting dots, and he just got the boxes and did all of the letters like really, really good. And that's exciting.
Huggy.
I know. That's good. I feel like if you're pregnant right now with a child with Down syndrome, you could give them a name like, I don't know, Allie. Those letters are so easy to write, an A and L and an I. You like throw in G's and S's and it gets a little tricky.
I've said it before and I've said it again.
It's a very long name.
Yeah.
That's why I named him Ace. A really true story.
Oh, gosh. So anyways, good news. Sweet little Augie. Micah, Mercedes.
Okay. For sunny May, if I've done this one already, so sorry if I have, but we were just at the park yesterday and she pumps herself on the swing. And it's just still really great because I have a no swings rule at the park if I have to participate. If you can push yourself on the swings, go for it. But right. I will not be pushing you on the swings. I have too many children for that. And so now I don't feel guilty because she can push herself on the swings and it's so great. And so can Rhodes. And so that seems really fun.
That's awesome. I just a little PT nugget to throw out there. Ace's physical therapist was working with him on pumping his own legs on the swing. And I think this is so great for all of you out there trying to teach your kids. She put a ball in front of him on the swing and was having him kick it with both feet.
Smart.
And then she put it back while he swung back and then he'd kick it again. And I've never really thought about how to teach my kids besides being like, put your legs up towards the the sun, people.
Forward, back, forward, back.
That's what I would do. Forward, back, forward, back. A little faster. Lift them up a little bit, you know.
You got to move your body too. You just got to feel it. I don't know. I don't know how to teach you how to swing.
No swings today. No, go down the slide.
So bring your ball next time, everybody. Bring the
ball. There you go. Smart. Micah, do you want to read some from a listener?
Yeah, we have something from my incredible Ivy, who is sharing that Ivy said mama for the first time.
That's huge.
Yes. So that is beautiful. As I have learned, like the muscles that it takes to make a is a hard one. Mm-hmm. And so for a little incredible Ivy to be able to say that, we're so excited for you. So thank you for sharing.
I love that. Good news, friends. Okay, we are going to wrap it up here. And don't forget, what's next week, everybody?
Episode 100.
100th episode. I think if you listen to the last episode, we talked about our New Year's resolution that we are now collectively going to learn the single ladies choreography. And I think for our 100th episode, we're going to sing it.
Dreams do come true.
Karaoke. Everyone's like, I will not listen. I can barely get through the good news. I will not listen to karaoke.
And each of us will take the lead. So then we'll hear the song three times. So
3 times in a row.
Yeah.
And that's our 100th episode.
It's just stay tuned, everybody. Get excited.
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Oh, gosh. All right, friends, girls, ladies, Mike and Mercedes, thanks for having this conversation. The weightiness and heaviness of it is very real. And it's only, I don't feel resolved. Mm-hmm. And that's good. That's a good way to end something like this. So we'll keep on thinking about it and wrestling and loving and extending grace to ourselves and our kids and others. And friends, we're so thankful for you to join us for the conversation. And we are excited to continue it with you. So head over to Instagram. We're the Lucky Few Pod on Instagram. And you can leave direct messages, comments. And we'll go live this week and talk about it a little bit more. So make sure you're following us there so that you can hear when that happens or see when that happens. And you can email us at theluckyfewpodcast.com. And everything else is there as well. We love hearing from you. There's a number there. You can send us a voicemail. You can share your good news. You can also DM us on Instagram with your good news and tell us what's going on with your loved one who has Down syndrome. And we are excited for this year. We are looking for new sponsors for the podcast. So we have a very committed and wonderful audience, and we are love to share good businesses with them. So if you have a product or a business and you would like to help us shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, then we want to partner with you. And you can email us at hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for all sponsorship opportunities. Thank you to Joshua Avis for editing this episode, to Valerie Schleter for producing it, and to all of you who have shared the Lucky Few podcast with friends, who listen faithfully and who continue to cheer us on. Don't forget, subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And remember, you are, dear listener, supporting your loved one with Down syndrome. You are a shadow of worth and you are a narrative shifter. Keep on showing up. Keep on keeping on. We're here cheering for you. And we look forward to being together with you on our 100th episode of the Lucky Few podcast. We'll see you later.
Bye, everybody. Bye.